Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast brought to you by our great friends at MyBookie. You can still jump in on our promo deal right now while you can, guys. You got about a week left, but still technically not too late. All you have to do is go to mybookie.ag, use our promo code UGA, and you know the deal. They're going to hook you up with that 50% bonus on top of your first deposit if you're a new user. So take advantage of it while you can. Last week, jump on it now. But all right, guys, I am your host, Tyler. And as I promised yesterday, I am back today. It's Monday night with some intel from week two of Georgia football's spring practice. Now, I use the term intel very reluctantly because I'm not that guy. I'm not going to lie to you guys. That's not me. I am not a quote-unquote intel guy. I'm not a beat writer. I am not source like that. Yeah, I do live in Athens, and by virtue of that, yes, I know a few people here and there, and that means I get some morsels of information every now and then, but I am emphatically not an insider. I've said that all along doing this podcast for 9 years. That is not who I am, and I'm not going to purport to be. But saying that, this is actually one of those rare times where I do actually have some legit intel to share with you guys. And the reason today is different is because this past weekend was the annual coaches clinic within our Georgia football program, right? Now, I was not in attendance. I was not in attendance like I would have liked to have been due to a scheduling conflict. I just couldn't make it happen this year. Sucks. I was hoping to, but just couldn't get out there. Hopefully, I will be back next year, but not this year. I was not out there this year. So I don't have firsthand knowledge of anything that's happening at practice right now. And I feel compelled to tell you that. I feel compelled to make sure you guys understand I was not there. I did not see things with my own two eyes. But even though I have not coached in a long, long time, it's been a minute now, I do still have a few contacts in the industry that were in attendance over the weekend. They were there at practice on Thursday. I think that's when it started. They were there Friday. There was no practice Friday. It was more just meetings and talking to coaches, guest speaker, all that kind of stuff. And then Saturday, we typically would have a scrimmage, but we did not have a scrimmage, apparently. And I guess that's kind of obvious. There were the coaches in attendance. You don't want to show too much because, look, our coaches are smart. They love the high school coaches out there in the state, and it's really important to have those kind of relationships. But they also know that there are people who like to let people know what they saw, which, hey, we benefit from. I benefit from that. Now I'm bringing it here on the podcast. So our coaches are smart people. Kirby Smart's a smart guy. He understands that. So it just kind of checks out. It makes sense that we would not have a full-on scrimmage because, yeah, he knows people are going to go share some things that they saw, but let's make sure we don't give them all too much to go share. But there were a lot of high school coaches from the state of Georgia that were there at practice on Thursday and on Saturday, and, yeah, they saw some things. And I do know a few people who were gracious enough to pass along some info that I can now pass along to you guys here on the podcast. But again, disclaimer, I feel like I have to say this again. I did not see any of this with my own two eyes like I would have liked to. So yes, this is very, very much secondhand information, which means it's someone else's interpretation of what they saw out there. And again, our coaches are smart. They understand what happens. So they are not going to put some crazy exotic stuff out there. They're not going to do anything at practice while the coaches are there that they don't want out there publicly. They basically just operate under the assumption that, yes, what they see at practice is going to get out there somewhere, and we don't want to show too much. So I say all that to make sure you understand that we should take everything that I'm going to say here on the podcast with a grain of salt and not take it as 100% gospel truth. But even though it shouldn't be viewed that way, it doesn't mean it doesn't have some sort of value. This is information from actual football coaches who I do respect. So I do tend to generally put some stock into what they saw. So anyway, I just want to make sure that we are all very clear on that up front. And last thing here before we jump into the actual intel, I was fortunate enough to talk to a number of different people that were there that saw practice. And they all, of course, as you would imagine, had their own things to say. They saw things their own way. Maybe they were watching, you know, there's a lot going on in practice. So anyone who's been at practice, you understand, like it's a freaking machine, man. Like, it's insane how structured our practices are and how much gets accomplished in such a short amount of time. Kirby has it planned out systematically to the nth degree. I mean, most of you out there probably played some level of football, high school football, whatever. So you had practices. I'm sure they were structured to some degree. But this is a different level. It's really hard to describe without someone actually seeing it. So there's a lot going on, and I say that to make sure people understand that you can't possibly be watching everything all at once. There's way too much going on. Different position groups are spread all over the field. So you're tending to watch like maybe the position group that maybe you coach or maybe you're interested in. You're going from group to group, from spot to spot on the field. So you're not seeing everything. So I did hear a lot of different things from different people. But on the show today, what I tried to do is put together the common themes that I heard, the names that I heard a lot of people like bring up, say, hey, man, this guy looked really good. The common themes, there's like analysis that I heard consistently from more than one source. I might have heard something from one guy, but if I didn't hear it from more than one person, and I don't want to bring it here on the podcast because like you can't really, I don't even know if it's like true verification. I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm not a big J journalist or anything like that, but I still want to follow some sense of integrity here and make sure that what I'm bringing you, I got from more than one person, because one person, like, I don't know how much talk you want to put in that, but if you hear from two, three, four people, okay, well, now we're talking. So that's what I'm bringing here today. I heard a lot of different things. I'm not going to bring everything I heard, because if I only hear it from one person, I'm not saying that they weren't right. I kind of like to hear from more than one person. So the things that I got here today on the show, these are things that I was able to get from a number of different sources or pretty common themes from a variety of people. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. Let's start with the offense. We'll do offense first, and then we'll flip things over to the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, I feel like I sound like a broken record right now. I know that's what it's going to sound like. And I guess I'm starting here because maybe this is a I told you so kind of thing. No, it's not that. I mean, hey, it's cool to hear that maybe you were kind of right on a take that you had, but it won't really matter until we actually see it on the field. But yes, as I told you guys back in December, Kobe Young seems to be kind of the real deal. We heard this during week one of spring practice, but like I, you know, you're hearing that like third, fourth hand. I didn't hear that from a football coach, for instance. So, you know, you hear that. You like to hear it. Maybe it's confirmation bias. So maybe it's one of those things like, hey, I thought this guy was going to be really good when we got him back in December. And maybe I'm just like, I'm looking to confirm that belief. Maybe. But when you start to hear it from actual football coaches that are there at practice, and again, more than one football coach who one of the first guys they brought up was Kobe Young. Like this guy, I didn't even know who he was before we signed him, but all of a sudden, like, this guy is legit. And I know that seems kind of weird, as I said multiple times, just a guy that was not the leader, even the second leading receiver on that Miami football team last year. So it's kind of like, and that's the pushback I got when I said that on the show in December. And that was kind of the take I had. It's like, guys, I think Kobe Young is like a legit number one option. Like, he hasn't been yet in his career, but because you haven't done it yet doesn't mean you can't do it. Doesn't mean you're not capable of it. And I had watched Kobe Young play. And when I watched him play, I know he hadn't done it yet, but I saw all the makings, all the signs, all the tools that you need to be that like legit number one option as like an alpha X receiver. And that was a common takeaway from people that I know that were there at practice on Thursday and Saturday. This guy is the real deal, making big time catches, spectacular catches, like the wow, like what just happened kind of catch, getting open, creating separation, making big time touchdown catches, all those things. Like he was a guy that was catching your attention there at practice. So right now what you have is a situation where I watched this guy quite a bit at Miami. I didn't watch every Miami game, but I watched a fair amount. And I know, he wasn't the top receiver at Miami. There were some circumstances behind that. They had major quarterback issues. Offensive coordinator issues have been a problem for them. They fired their coach from 2022, 2023. They have a new guy. They're working in a new system. And really, with the quarterback situation, Xavier Restrepo, their slot receiver, he was their top receiver at Miami. But if you go back and look at his numbers, he averaged like eight or nine yards per catch. He was like a security blanket. Like, he wasn't making big-time plays. And they were just like, hey, we can get this guy the ball in space, let him do something. And when you're working with young quarterbacks, I mean, I know Tyler Van Dyke was there last year, but he was banged up a lot of the year. He got benched, and they were playing a true freshman. And when you're talking about a young guy like that, those guys have no idea what's going on. They don't have a grasp of the offensive system. So going through progressions and reading defenses, that's not something that they're typically equipped to do. And the guy that was playing for them last year was simply not equipped to do that. So when you don't really have that ability at that point in your career, you still got to throw the football. So who you're going to lean on? Yeah, short, quick passes to your slot receiver. And that's what they did. But it doesn't mean that Colby Young didn't have the tools to be more productive than what he was at Miami. And that's all I was trying to say back in December. Now, he's got to go out there and do it on the field. But based on what I saw from him last year, and then what you're hearing from week one of spring practice, and now like legit coaches saying the same things, echoing those same thoughts, like, all signs are pointing to this guy being a big-time playmaker for us. Now, is he going to be that number one option receiver this year? That still remains to be seen. I can't sit here and tell you for a fact that's going to happen. I don't know. I believe he can do that. I believe he can develop into that guy. He's got to go out there and do it. But it does seem like, it sounds like, he is well on his way to doing so. Now, he still is kind of battling a little bit of an ankle injury, but he's out there doing a lot of things, so it's not a major thing. And like I told you guys last week, Ra-Ra Thomas, he does have a head start on Colby Young. He was here in the program last year. He went through his learning curve last year, but he's out with an injury still right now. So that opens the window for a guy like Colby Young to start to make a little bit more of a move than maybe he otherwise would have had an opportunity to do if Ra-Ra Thomas is out there taking a lot of those reps. He's not. So Colby Young is getting a lot more of those reps than maybe he would have. And it certainly sounds like he is taking advantage of those reps. Apparently, he's still not like opening practice with the number one offense, and that's not unusual. Kirby Smart, especially these new guys with coming in from the transfer portal, you're going to make them earn it. Like, it's not good for your culture if you just bring a guy in and say automatically, hey, you're the guy. Like, no, you got to go out there and make them earn it. And so he's going through that right now, but he is getting a lot of reps, the ones, he's maybe not opening the practices with that number one group offensively, but he's getting a lot of work with the number one offense. He's working with Carson Beck, and when he's getting opportunities, he is making things happen. So to me, that's very exciting news, because we need somebody. In the absence of Brock Bowers, we need somebody to step up there. I think we have a number of options who can be there. I think Don McLovett can do that. And actually, that's another guy I have here in my notes getting a lot of praise from coaches who were in attendance, that this guy was really making plays all over the field. And this is a guy that we told you last year, I felt like he could do more of that within our offense. But when you have Brock Bowers operating a lot in the middle of the field, and we use Brock in different ways, but he does operate a lot. He did operate a lot in the middle of the field. Man, I still hate to use Brock Bowers in the past tense. That hurts. That sucks. But it is what it is. It's the nature of college sports. But those guys kind of operate a lot in the same area of the field, and so we were using Dom Lovett in a little bit of a different way. He was heavily used as an RPO guy, especially the first half or so of the year. He was, I don't want to say exclusively an RPO receiver, but he was the primary option with the RPO stuff. But yeah, we use Brock with the RPO stuff at times too, but we were using Dom a lot in that regard. And you know, when Brock got hurt, we started using him a little bit differently. Started, you know, all of a sudden, huh, go figure, started making a little bit more plays for us. So I think he can be much more that guy this year, what he was from Missouri back in 2022. But if you have a guy like that, if you have a guy like Colby Young, and Ra-Ra Thomas, when he gets back, you know, when he's healthy, he's a really good player in his own right. Then you have Dylan Bell, who we know can make some plays out there. Then you all of a sudden have a really good group of receivers. Now, are any of them Brock Bowers? Of course not. I've said that a million times. I'm sure I'll say it a million more times. No, but when you have a number of guys who can make big-time plays for you, and now they're getting more opportunities, it's not, you're not going to be better without Brock Bowers. It's hard to say that, but maybe you can compensate for that if you have a number of guys. You know, it's the old cliche, like, we're going to replace him by committee. Maybe that's what it's going to be, but I still think Colby Young is a guy that can have the impact of like a number one type receiver. We just got to see it. Got to see it on the field. So very encouraging stuff that I continue to hear about Colby Young. Stick with the receiver theme. Another guy that I heard some stuff about week one, but I was very hesitant to bring it on here on the show, because like, he's a vet now. He's a senior. So maybe it's just one of those seniority things. You're opening spring practice, so he's been around. He's a leader on the team, so you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but there's younger guys who are going to overtake him. But Arian Smith, it really sounds like he's starting to finally put it all together. And that, guys, is an incredibly good development for the University of Georgia's football team. We all know what kind of physical ability he has. We know the speed is unmatched, not just on the team, not just in the SEC, maybe in all of college football. We're talking like legit, like college-level track speed, 10, 100-meter type stuff. That is something you cannot teach, but you have to be able to harness it. And with all the injuries, as we talked about many times throughout the years, all the injuries that he suffered throughout his career, his development was set back a lot, multiple times throughout his career. And for a guy that was very, very raw coming out of high school, that really, really hurt him. And that's a big reason of why, big part of why he's never been able to consistently stay on the field and has been passed up by some different players at times. But I've always maintained, like, don't give up on Arian, because when a guy's that physically gifted and has that special, unique talent, that speed, that skill set, you can't give up on the guy. You got to keep plugging away and keep working and keep developing. Keep working with this guy. And we've done that. And to his credit, I know it's been very frustrating for him, but he's a fantastic young man. From all accounts, everything I've ever been told about this kid is, like, the team respects him, coaches love him, he just works hard, great attitude. Hasn't had as much success as he would like to have, obviously, but he hasn't really let it affect his attitude out there in public with the coaches, with the team. Hasn't become a locker room cancer, which that receiver position, guys, you know how that goes, the diva wide receiver. Arian's kind of been the antithesis of that throughout his entire career. So I've always been rooting for this kid, not just for our team, because it would be great if a guy that talented could actually, like, have the light bulb go off in his head, or go turn on, I guess is how you'd say that, in his head. But for him too, man, like, you hear all these great things about this young man. I just want him to have some success. He's been through a lot of trials and tribulations during his time here in Athens, and I think he has NFL talent. He's just got to put it together. And it seems like he stayed healthy for a little while now, almost 2 years now, knock on wood. And it seems like he's starting to kind of turn that corner late in this career, but I guess better late than never. It's one of those scenarios. But this is a guy that's been out there. I mean, I heard in week one that he was opening spring practice with the number one offense. And that carried over into what I heard this past week from people who were actually there. Arian Smith not only is still out there with the number one offense, he's making plays. He's getting a ton of reps with the number one offense. Looks like he's turning into more of a, like, legit receiver, not just like a speed merchant, which, again, that is incredible news for our offense. He has a skill set that, quite frankly, we just don't have otherwise. Anthony Evans in the slot is the next closest, but he's still not quite Arian Smith level speed. Arian's a different level. So that's great news. And I didn't bring it on here the first week of spring practice. I want to hear a little more. And I knew the coach's clinic was coming up, but I keep hearing the same thing. So Arian Smith, Colby Young, two guys really making some progress at receiver. I heard a lot of people talk about Dylan Bell as well. Not surprised. I just didn't hear as many people bring him up. Colby Young was one of the guys I heard first and foremost from a lot of people. Arian Smith as well. So receiver, it looks like we're going to be pretty good there, guys. We have some options. Now we got to see how it all plays out and what that rotation is going to look like. But it seems like we have some legit options there. So that to me, is very exciting news. Let's stick with the skill positions here for one more player. This is probably something that you're already aware of, but it and this is a guy that we know is a good player. We've seen him do it at the college level, not at Georgia, but at Florida. He was a big-time playmaker when he actually gave him the football. I don't think they gave him the football near enough when he was in Gainesville. But Trevor Etienne is apparently just making plays all over the field, which that I didn't know if I wanted to bring that on here, because, like, yeah, that we know that he's capable of that, but it's really nice to hear it within our offense in the different contexts. We know Branson Robinson out there. This guy has stepped right in, and, like, he's just making play after play out there. Now, obviously, it's tough to talk about Trevor Etienne right now without mentioning the arrest that we talked about on the show yesterday. So we all know about that. I'm torn by it. Like, as a Georgia fan, competitively, I want him out there in the field. I don't want him to be out for the game against Clemson. But as, like, a human being who lives in Athens, I'm also okay if he did get suspended. Like, that just, I think that punishment would kind of fit that crime, to be honest with you. I think that's, like, I know it's technically a misdemeanor, but, I mean, we're talking about taking people's lives in your hands, man. Like, you're saying my life's more important. Like, me going to have a joyride, having fun, drinking and driving, doing whatever, that's more important than someone's life, potentially. No, that doesn't check out for me. So, yeah, as a human being, I would have zero issues if he did not play against Clemson. But as a Georgia fan who wants us to win and wants what's best for our program, yeah, of course I want him out there. But, you know, it's not my job. I'm not the one who gets paid $10 million a year to reconcile the differences there and figure out exactly what to do. I don't think he'll miss time. That'd be my guess right now, but we'll see. Based on past history, I don't think he'll miss time. But out there on the field, the guy is making plays. No surprise there. But I did hear that from multiple people. Wanted to bring it on here. Now, one thing that I did hear that was more encouraging that I needed to hear is I heard some really positive things about the guys behind him right now. No Branson Robinson, we know that. But Roger Robinson and Andrew Paul had multiple people talk very glowingly about both those guys. And, you know, the thing with Rod, I keep hearing it over and over again. And we saw it. And that's the thing, too. That's why I put a lot of stock into it. I saw it. We saw it. You saw it in the Orange Bowl against Florida State. Even in that game, his body just looked different from what it looked like week one back in early September. Just very, very different. And it seems like he carried that over through the early parts of the offseason into spring practice where he's gotten his body in shape. He's still a big guy. Don't get me wrong. He'll never not be a big guy, but I told this story many times in the podcast. And if you're new, I know we have some new people coming over from YouTube who found the podcast, and welcome. Appreciate you guys being here. So if you haven't heard it, I live in Athens, and over the summer, I was the Blind Pig. Love the Blind Pig. And my wife and I were there. I was at a Friday night. Yeah, if I was out, it's probably a Friday night. And it's early Friday. She's like a first stop for us. And so we saw someone turn around. I'm at the bar there and see some football players. I'm going to the bathroom, get up, go to the bathroom, walk back to where we were sitting. And I look up and I see some football players. It's obvious. You can tell the difference. You can see the difference between an average human being and a college football player. You kind of just know these things. And then I see a guy. You guys know I follow recruiting very closely, so I know what these recruits look like, generally speaking. And I see Roderick Robinson, and they're kind of sitting down. They're paying their check and ready to get up and leave. And then the dude stands up, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, oh, man, that's a running back? And I don't say that, like, in positive terms. Like, he was, let's just say, rather rotund. You don't see running backs. It's like Ron Dane-level rotund type stuff going on. I was like, whoa, man, I don't know about that. I know he's a young guy. We're going to get this guy in shape. And he still largely kind of looked like that early last year. And, I mean, I just don't think he was in great shape. I don't think he was explosive. I don't even think he was really running hard. That was always my thing with Roderick Robinson. It's like, okay, you're a big back. That's what you are. If you're a big back, you better run big, because if you don't run big, then what value do you bring to the team? I don't think he was running big last year. I think he was going down pretty easily. I think he was going down with arm tackles far too often. He was just not running behind his pads. It's like, if you're a big back and that's what's happening right now, then why do we have you out there on the field? And obviously the coach started to feel the same way. I know he went down with an injury. When he came back, wasn't seeing much time because, hey, you got to get your body in shape, man. You got to take this seriously. But to Rod's credit, that has happened. And what I'm being told is, like, he is running like a man possessed, which I did not see last year. I saw in the Orange Bowl when he got a few carries, and I was like, whoa, okay, Rod, let's go. That's what I'm looking for. Where was that earlier in the year? And it seems like that's carried over to spring practice. So if we can get that version of Roderick Robinson, this guy might be a big-time player for us. Like, he's got that potential. He's like I saw with Arian, he's a different kind of back. He's a different kind of back than anyone that we have on the roster. And if he just runs like that, like I saw him do in high school, then we might have a legit player in our hands here, guys. We didn't have that early last year. Now, he was young and all that. He needed to get body in shape. But it sounds like he's really taking it seriously. And he's got his body in shape. And he's really playing at a high level right now. At least that's what you're hearing through the early weeks of spring practice. I'm really anxious, honestly, to see him at G-Day, to see if it's really carrying over in that setting from what we saw in the Orange Bowl. I know G-Day is not a real game. I get that. But hey, it's the closest thing we get to an actual game until, I guess, late August this year. So really encouraging things there. And same thing by Andrew Paul. Like, we know when he got some opportunities last year, he didn't look the part. He didn't look the part. He didn't even look as good as he looked in high school. I mean, he's a guy that he was a late take for us. We got him from Clemson. I thought he was going to go to Clemson late in that 2022 cycle, but we were able to get him away from the Tigers, comes to Athens, and was making some waves during fall camp when he got here. Then he tears his ACL. Then, you know, it's a journey, man, coming out from the ACL tear. And you got to get confidence back in that thing, and it takes a minute. It takes a while. But he's now more than a full year removed from it. So, well more than a full year removed from it. So it sounds like he is getting back into form. And I heard some really positive things about how he's running. Right behind his pads, looking quick, looking fast out there, more explosive than he looked when he got opportunities last year. So it sounds like the guys behind Trevor Etienne are also looking really strong at that running back position. And that's a really strong, encouraging bit of news for us, because we were okay at running back last year. I love Dejan Edwards, and I love Kendall Milton. I really do. And those guys were so good for us, great leaders. I mean, all Dejan Edwards ever did was make plays. Kendall Milton dealt with injuries his entire career. I'm really hoping that he has a long, fruitful NFL career. I'm very hopeful for him because he's a great young man. But let's just be real. Neither one of those guys were like elite backs. I mean, they're not quite that tier. They were really good, but they weren't quite that tier. I think we have a chance to have more than one like true, legit elite backs. Once again, our backfield. Running back, you getting back to its roots, especially if we can get Branson Robinson back healthy, and if he can be like the old Branson that we knew before the injury, which remains to be seen. But if he can get back to that point, like, we might have some serious, serious talent in that backfield, especially a guy like Nate Frazier coming in that he's not even on campus right now. He'll be here in the summer. So really, really encouraging news on the running back front. But all right, guys, before we move on, we've got a couple more positions on the offense that I do want to run through, but I do first want to quickly remind you on this first break about our great friends at Alumni Hall. Guys, we are at the tail end of this deal with Alumni Hall. They were kind enough to extend it throughout football season, through the basketball season, through March Madness, but we're in the final week of March. The Sweet 16 is now set. So if you are going to take advantage of this deal, it is legitimately now or never. You have 1 week. It ends at the end of March. So jump on it now. Go to mybookie.ag. Don't wait any longer. Press pause. You can come right back. I'm not going anywhere. Press pause. Go to mybookie.ag, use our promo code UGA if you're a new user, and they're going to hook you up with a 50% bonus on whatever it is that you deposit with that first deposit. So you deposit $100, get an extra $50. You deposit $200, get an extra $100. You get the idea, right? So jump on it now, guys. Like, legitimately, now is the time. It is going away. It's going bye-bye. I've talked to them. They're not going to extend it anymore this year. At least right now, maybe we'll get back for football season. We'll see. But right now, go ahead and jump on it. Start building that bankroll for the college football season. You've seen these teams in the NCAA tournament. You know who's good. You know who's not. You probably have your team that you think is going to go far. So jump in on it. Pick those teams. Make those bets. And do it with my bookie.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, guys, let's keep this thing rolling. Let's stick with the offense for a few more positions. Real quickly, tight end. We all know Brock Bowers will no longer be wearing the red and black, which I'm still not quite over. Kind of breaks my heart to think about it, but he is gone. That's just the way college football works. But we also have a very talented tight end room. Now, with the news that Pierce Sperlin is no longer going to be able to play football, he had to medically retire from the sport, that does strike a little bit of a blow to the talent in that room. But we still have some talent in that room. Now, getting a guy like Benjamin Urosik from Stanford on campus this summer, that will be a huge boon to that unit. But we still have some talented players. We still have, obviously, Oscar Delp. We have Lawson Lucky. We have the two talented tight ends, the young guys, the freshman, Colton Heinrich and Jaden Riddell. Riddell's been dealing with a little bit of injury. I did hear from a couple people that Colton Heinrich actually is looking pretty solid right now, which, honestly, I didn't have like the major high expectations for him, but it sounds like he's actually making some plays as a pass catcher, which he in high school, I mean, he could do some of those things. He's more of like an inline guy. That's basically how we recruited him, but apparently he's more than an athlete than maybe I gave him credit for. So that's really positive to hear. But the big thing I kept getting about the tight end position is Oscar Delp. Like, it's Oscar Delp, then big gap in everyone else in the tight end room. Not to say that we don't have talent, but Oscar Delp is just far and away above everyone else in that room. And that makes sense. Like, that's probably how it should be at this point, right? Oscar's the only one that has like any kind of like meaningful, serious playing time. Yes, Lawson Lucky got some time last year, but I mean, Jaden Riddell and Colton Heinrich, they're brand new. They have zero snaps at the college level. So it makes sense, but to hear it from multiple people say the same thing, essentially, Oscar Delp is the guy at tight end right now. And I tried to ask some questions like, how are we using him? It sounds like we are using him a little bit more in the mover tight end role, but he's still playing largely the inline role. I believe, and maybe I'll be proven wrong. There's no guarantee. I believe that Benjamin Urosik is going to be the guy that slots in at that position because that's what he did at Stanford. He did it as well as basically anyone in the country not named Brock Bowers or Michael Mayer over the past couple of years. So I'm hopeful that those young guys really come along. We're going to need them to. We need depth at that position. But it's also nice to hear that Oscar is starting to take that next step. And he's not going to be Brock Bowers, but starting to take that next step is going to be even more of a weapon for us in our offense this year. That's great to hear. All right, let's move on to the offensive line. I told you guys last week, one of the things that we did learn is with the first week of spring practice, the opening unit on the offensive line, the first unit offensive line, included Micah Morris at left guard and not Dylan Fairchild, who started the majority of last year at that left guard position. He was in a rotation with Micah Morris. They were both playing a lot of snaps, but it was Dylan Fairchild who was consistently getting those starts. One, some Arius Mims went down an injury, had to move Xavier Truss out of that left guard spot and move him to right tackle. It was primarily starting games. In fact, I think almost maybe all but one game after that point, it was Dylan Fairchild with Michael Morris subbing in, rotating pretty liberally. Well, now the roles are kind of flipped. We learned that last week. That has carried over to this week, so that's not anything new. It's just, hey, that's still the way it is. Right now, with the number one offense, we're opening with Micah Morris at left guard. But what is new, and we kind of assumed that this was the case last week, but we didn't know for sure. But I got from a number of different people that, yes, Morris is quote-unquote starting at left guard. He's the first guy out there with the first team offense. That is very true. But Dylan Fairchild is getting just as many reps with the number one offense at left guard as Micah Morris is. And that doesn't surprise me at all, because that's kind of how it was operating last year, if you really think about it. You know, those guys were in that rotation. I don't want to say they shared an even number of reps, but it wasn't that far off of it, to be quite honest with you. Fairchild definitely played more snaps. He played a little bit more than 100 more snaps than Morris did in the regular season last year. So he got more snaps, but Morris got a lot of snaps in his own right. This year, right now, it seems like those roles are a little bit reversed, but that is a battle that is, the word I got was fierce. Like, that is a fierce battle right now, and that's really the only battle the offensive line, like, according to people that were there, is like, hey, you know, it seems like the other guys are pretty locked in. Like, there's no other position we're really rotating like we are at left guard. Right tackle with Truss and Monroe Freeling, that's the next closest. But that about left guard, I mean, it is back and forth with those guys. Right now, it seems like Michael Morris does hold the edge, but it's a very, very tenuous edge, very slight edge. And that battle, I mean, it's going to carry on through spring practice, I'm sure through fall camp, and like I said last week, probably even into the 2024 season. But those guys are battling it out, and they're both going to play. They're both going to play a ton. I'm not really all that concerned about it. Somebody's got to start. Somebody's got to come off the bench. But they're both going to play a ton at that position. And staying with the offensive line, I had almost to a man. I mean, because I tried to ask about different positions. Hey, this position group, like, who stood out? What'd you see? And basically everyone that I talked to, one of the first guys they brought up on the offensive line was Jared Wilson. Which it wasn't, I mean, Tate Ratledge, and people said, oh yeah, he looks really good too. But they were impressed with Jared Wilson. And this is a guy that's going to be replacing Cedric Van Pran at center. And maybe, it might be one of those things, like, maybe Kirby, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors. Is Kirby talking? Because I know in his press conference last week, last Tuesday, he was very much praising Jared Wilson. And maybe he was doing that to some of the coaches behind the scenes at practice. Then, you know, they get to talk with the coaches, they hobnob, they have dinner and all that kind of stuff. So I'm sure he's talking about some of the players there in those settings. So maybe they're influenced by that. I don't know. But all I can tell you is what I was told is that Jared Wilson is looking really good. Like, he's a really good athlete. He seems to be more powerful than what Cedric Van Pran was last year. Most of these guys, like, they go to coaches clinic pretty much every year. And they see these guys year after year after year. And they were very high on Jared Wilson. Now, my concern with Jared Wilson, I don't know if concern is the right word, but what we need to see is, out there on the field, is he going to be able to make the calls? Is he going to be as much of a leader? Is he going to be that kind of stalwart on the offensive line the way that Cedric Van Pran was? And, you know, Curtis and I, we've been telling you guys for years, Ced's a really good player. He's a really good player. But there's always a reason Cedric Van Pran came back for his senior year. And it wasn't just because he loved the University of Georgia. Sure, that's a part of it. You know, hey, you come back to Georgia, compete for another national title. That's a part of it. But if Cedric Van Pran got a first-round grade coming out of the 2022 season, he would have gone pro. He came back because he did not get the NFL draft grade that he was hoping to get. So what I'm saying is, the NFL scouts understand, like, this guy was a really good college player for us. And maybe he's going to be one of those, like, Jason Kelce kind of guys that, you know, just works hard. He's just a grinder. He's a leader in the locker room, the clubhouse presence, like that kind of thing. And so he carves out a career for himself, has a really nice career in the NFL. And that would not shock me. And I'm very hopeful for Ced's case that it's going to happen. But, like, an on-the-field standpoint, he wasn't, like, a dominant center. No, not at any point. And I'm not sure Jared Wilson will ever be a dominant center either, because I haven't seen this guy play enough to really know. I mean, I've seen him play a little bit, no more than you guys have, you know, when he's gotten some spot duty and garbage time. But when I've seen him play, I see a guy that does play with more power. He's a more powerful guy. Gets more movement from that spot. Is a better athlete than Cedric Van Pran. Now, will he be as good as he was? Because, I mean, playing center is more than just the physical parts. The physical parts are a lot of it. And I do think that's what Ced, like, wasn't elite. He was elite in the other aspects of playing that position. He wasn't elite in the physical stuff. I think Jerry Wilson might end up being elite physically. Now, the other parts of playing the position, that's what remains to be seen. I don't know yet. We're going to find out. But if the mental aspect, the leadership aspect of it, if that is up to par with his athleticism, his physical ability, we might have a big time player, like an all SEC caliber guy. Maybe even, I don't know if I want to go all American yet. I mean, I haven't seen enough to really go there yet, but I think we might have a big time player on our hands here at that center position. So that was really encouraging to hear as well when you're placing a guy who's been such a stalwart in our offensive line in Cedric Van Pran. And then finally, let's wrap up the offense with the most important position on the field for any football team, which of course is the quarterback position. We all know Carson Beck is back this year. We all have very high expectations for Carson Beck to take his game to another level and in the process lead us back to the promised land once again. And who knows, maybe even put himself in Heisman Trophy conversations and put himself in the conversation to maybe be the top overall draft pick. Now, he's got to go out and raise his game to that different level in order to accomplish those things, but we're all very hopeful that maybe Carson can actually do that. And we're talking about spring practice, so let's understand that, right? We're not going against any other teams. There's no game plan being put in. This is just simply practice. Let's go all Allen Iverson on and say, we're talking about practice here, okay? But still saying that, glowing doesn't quite suffice in trying to explain exactly what type of feedback I got on Carson Beck and how he's looking right now at practice. Again, Allen Iverson, we're talking about practice. I know, it's practice, but still, there's something to it, right? Like Kirby's big on, if you don't practice the right way, then you're not going to play that way. And I very much believe that as well. What you do at practice is going to typically translate over to the field of play. There are certain guys who maybe aren't quote unquote practice players. And I know guys that exist, but more often than not, your habits that you pick up at practice, the habits that you show and you demonstrate at practice, the things you do at practice, the way you go about your business at practice, that carries over to the game. And as far as Carson Beck goes, I heard essentially to a man, everyone saying the same thing. Carson Beck is absolutely locked in right now. Don't forget, these are guys that were at the coach's clinic last year. Most of them were at the coach's clinic last year, so they saw Carson Beck when he was still battling for that number one QB spot, that QB one spot against Brock Vandegrift and Gunnar Stockton this time last year. So yeah, this is a group of guys that, for the most part, saw him last year at spring practice, this time last year, and saw him now, saw him last week. And they were all just raving about the progress this guy has made. You saw it out there on the field last year for the most part, but the word I kept getting was command, command, command. This guy is in complete command of our offensive system. And that's not to say he wasn't last year for the most part. He was, but it appears as though, it sounds like he's taking that next step. Now, like everyone else, he's got to go out there and do it on the field of play in actual game settings. That has to happen, but we're hearing all the right things right now to lead us to believe that, yeah, Carson Beck will live up to the hype this year. So while that's not breaking news, again, I think we all have very high expectations for what Carson can be this year, but at the very least, it's encouraging to hear that, yeah, right now at this point, this early stage, yes, but this early stage, he is looking the part. But another really encouraging development is the progress, the development of Gunnar Stockton. This is a guy that we know is a talented football player. But he was, let's just be real, he was always third fiddle when we're talking about Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift, really because of experience more than anything else. Like he just wasn't in the system as long as those guys. Certainly Carson Beck and Brock had a year on him as well. So he was always kind of just fighting to get into that conversation. He's always done some really good things. I mean, I've seen this guy at practice, and I mean, he flashes. Like, he's got the skills. Like, you see the ability. It's just, it hasn't always been consistent in his career, and that's why he was third string last year. But he does bring a level of athleticism to the position that Carson Beck can't match. Carson does a lot of other things better than Gunnar does right now, but the athleticism, he's just not going to be on that level ever. Gunnar's just a better overall athlete, although Carson is, I think, a deceiving athlete. He's not the type of athlete that Gunnar Stockton is. And we saw some of that in the Orange Bowl. But as a passer, the feedback I got is that this kid has flipped the switch. Like, he is dialed in right now. And while he's not at Carson's level, no one said that. I mean, everyone's like, no, he's like not Carson. He's clearly number two. Carson's clearly head and shoulders above everyone else in that room, and it's not even close. Like, there's legitimately no quarterback competition for that number one job. It's Carson, and then it's a battle for the number two job. It's not even really a battle with number two job. Like, that was the feedback I got is, yeah, Carson's clearly number one, and Gunnar is clearly number two. And you would hope that would be the case, considering the experience he does have in the system. Ryan Pleglisi is now in the role that Gunnar was kind of in, kind of just not having as much experience. And it's not an indictment of Ryan Pleglisi saying that Gunnar is just clearly ahead of him right now. He should be. Pleglisi's head is spinning right now in his first spring on campus. He's an early enrollee. But Gunnar Stockton, it's not just that he is the clear number two. I think he was going to be the clear number two no matter what. There was really no world, in my opinion, coming into this season where Gunnar would not be number two. But it was almost like, okay, I guess he's going to be number two by default because he's like now with Vandegrift moving on to Kentucky, like he's that guy with experience in the system. But what I was told is it's more than just that. It's not just that he has experience in the system. He's translating that experience to his performance at practice. He's going through progressions much more crisply than he ever has. He feels more confident. He's not, because one of the things that Gunnar would do as a good athlete, he's kind of guy that, you know, if the first read wasn't always there, when you're not super comfortable in the system, then you just kind of take off. You rely on your legs. Well, it seems like he's staying in the pocket more consistently. He's going through his progressions, finding his reads, finding his checkdowns if necessary. He's always had a good arm. He's putting the ball on the money with the accuracy, all those things. So it seems like he's also taking the next step in his development, which is great for us. Not so much necessarily for this year. Hopefully it doesn't matter this year, right? That's the hope, that Carson, knock on wood, stays healthy. We don't have to have Gunnar come in. But if something, God forbid, did happen to Carson, it does sound like Gunnar is ready to step in and not be Carson necessarily, but at least be good enough to the point where we're not going to see a dramatic drop-off in our production offensively. And our offense will certainly look a little bit different with Gunnar, because he does have a little bit of a different skill set. But it also, more importantly, sets us up really well for that 2025 season, where Gunnar Stockton will be the odds-on favorite to win that job. Now, will he win it? I don't know. He's got to go out there and do it. Ryan Pulglisi is going to have something to say about that. He's just not going to fade away, but he'll still be really, really young. Gunnar has a lot more experience in this system than Pulglisi has. Will we go to the transfer portal? Probably, I would say right now. There's a good chance of that. But what caliber guy are we going to get? I mean, that's always a crapshoot. You never really know. So it's really encouraging to hear that Gunnar is taking that next step. Because think about Carson. We were hearing a lot of the same things about Carson Beck behind the scenes at practice before he ever got the job. And then once Carson finally got that job, he took it and ran with it. So it seems like Gunnar Stockton is following a very similar trajectory to what Carson Beck did. It took Carson, he was in the system for 3 years before he got his shot? And we kept hearing behind the scenes, like, remember 2022, guys? Like, Kirby said straight up, like, he's quarterback number two. Well, then JT gets hurt, Daniels goes down, and then we bypass a guy that Kirby publicly said was QB2, and we go with the guy that he trusts more because he's actually seen him do on the field, and Stetson Bennett, and the rest is history. But we had heard all throughout that spring practice, fall camp, that Carson Beck had really started to take those strides. The light had really gone on for him. And now we're hearing very similar things about Gunnar Stockton. And again, it shouldn't matter for this year. Hopefully it doesn't have to matter this year. But that sets us up really well for a nice transition from Carson Beck in 2023 and 2024 to potentially Gunnar Stockton in 2025, assuming that he holds on to that job. So that, of course, was very encouraging to hear, like all these other things were encouraging to hear. But all right, guys, so that was the offense. When we get back from this final break, I will run through some things on the defensive side of the ball that I heard from some people that I trust. But first, I do want to remind you about our great friends at Alumni Hall. If you're in the market for Georgia gear, guys, I know that everyone has their own preferences, your own styles that you're looking for, your own brands that you prefer. I know that. But whatever it is that is your go-to, trust me, Alumni Hall is going to have it, because they have the best selection of Georgia gear that you will find anywhere. And as a fine connoisseur of Georgia gear, please take my word on that. I've tried them all throughout the years, but I remember the first time that I walked into Alumni Hall when it opened years ago inside the Express Shopping Center. It's like Field of Dreams. I walked in there and I was like, is this heaven? And they're like, no, it's Alumni Hall. And I was sold. Like, I don't get my George gear from anywhere else. It's Alumni Hall. I mean, like, they just have everything I need. So why would I go anywhere else? And I know they're going to have everything that you guys want as well. So stop in today here inside the Epshire Shopping Center in the Classic City, or online at alumnihall.com if you're not in the Athens area. And they will ship all that same great gear directly to your front door. So stop in today. Visit them online, because Alumni Hall is where the Bulldog shop.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
All right, guys, let's flip things over to the defensive side of the ball. I don't want to leave them out. I have some defensive intel. And I want to start with a guy just like Colby Young. I told you guys offensively, he's a guy that I had kind of tabbed before the spring as a name to watch this spring. So defensively, I'm going to do the same thing. one of the players on my players to watch list. If you guys watched that YouTube video that I put out a couple weeks ago, which, by the way, if you're not subscribed to our YouTube channel, make sure you do that. Got some great content coming down the pipe for you guys. I'm actually going to be working on a video tomorrow. Got some great plans for it, where I'm going to be breaking down the newest commitment, number one quarterback in the 2026 class, Jared Curtis. I'm going to be breaking down some film. We talked about him last night on the show, but I want to actually do a film breakdown so you guys can see exactly what I'm talking about. When I call him Josh Allen, I want you to see exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm going to try to get that out for you tomorrow. I might not get it done till Wednesday, but we will get it done at some point this week, getting the film ready, cutting the tape and getting all that stuff ready. It takes a little bit more time, but I'm on it. I'm working on it. So check that out, guys. Again, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Glory UGA Podcast on YouTube. Like the videos, watch the videos, comment. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts, all those things. Greatly, greatly appreciated. But anyway, another one of the players that I spotlighted as one of the 10 players to watch this spring, defensively, for me, is a no-brainer. It's Jalen Walker. We've talked about it here on this podcast. This man has got to be on the field more this year. It's just that simple. Like, there's no ifs, and, ors, or buts about it. This dude has got to play. He's far too talented, far too gifted, far too disruptive as a pass rusher for a team that has been struggling to find those kind of guys in recent years. This man's got to play. So I'm not throwing this paid $10 million a year to figure out how to do that. Y'all figure it out. And it seems like that's kind of happening, because it was music to my ears. I knew that he was getting a lot of run right now, especially with Smile Mondin not practicing in the spring, coming back from that navicular injury that he suffered late last season. But I did not know. I was not aware that Jalen Walker was working with the number one defense right now at inside linebacker, in that Mac linebacker position that Smile Mondin plays. I kind of see Jalen more as a money, because I think size-wise, I mean, he's like 240, 245. He's a big guy. He's bigger than basically all of our other linebackers. He fits more as a money in our scheme, which is typically more like the downhill old school guys, what Pop Dumas Johnson played. But that's kind of what C.J. Allen plays as well. Like, that's really what his body is built to play as well. So if you have C.J. Allen there, well, Jalen Walker's a better overall athlete. He's bigger, but he's also a better athlete. So he's got that versatility. He can play both. So it's like, hey, we understand. It seems like our coaches are getting it, right? Like what I've been saying for 3, 4, 5 months now. The dude's got to play. Find a freaking way to get the guy on the field. It has to happen. And so it's music to my ears. I know Smile Mondin's going to start this year, but if Jalen Walker is that next man up, and look, Raylan Wilson, you guys know I'm very high on Raylan Wilson too, and he's also getting a lot of work with the number one defense as well. Like, there's a lot of rotation going on there because we are stacked at that position. But hear that Jalen Walker is actually right now working with the number one defense, music to my ears. That dude is a difference maker. And what do you do with difference makers? You got to get him on the field, number one. And it seems like we're finding a way to get this guy on the field. He was recruited as an inside linebacker. It's really kind of what he slots at. He is somewhat of a tweener between Jack and an inside linebacker, but his body is an inside linebacker body, a bigger inside linebacker, but he's got the athleticism to compensate for that. So that's great. We got to find a way to get this guy on the field. And to hear that right now he's working the ones with Smile Mondin not being out there, that's incredible. I don't expect him to start this year. Smile is going to be back. He's a veteran. He's been with us now. He's going to his third year as a starter. He'll start. But Jalen is going to play a lot, a lot. And of course, not anything that I didn't already know and you guys didn't already know. The feedback I got on how he looked out there was like, this guy is off the charts, crazy athletic. And we know that. Like, we know he's explosive. We know that he's got the speed. He's got the size. I mean, he's like the total package at inside linebacker. He really, really is. And some of the coaches that were in attendance that I talked to were just blown away at how good he looked at that position. Because he didn't really play that position all that much last year. Late in the year, he got a little bit more run there when we were dealing with some injuries, but not all that much. He's playing more Jack, especially on third down. So to see him kind of settle into that position a little bit more permanently and be playing at the level that he's playing at, according to people that I trust, that is amazing news for our defense and also for our chances to get back to a national championship game and bring that trophy back home. I also found this comment funny. Now, this was only from one guy, but one guy said exactly what Kirst and I have kind of been saying for the past 3 or 4 months since Pop Dumas Johnson announced he was transferring, ends up at Kentucky. And look, we love Pop. Pop did a great job for us. There were some physical limitations, as we were very quick to point out the past couple years, but I just found it funny. One of the guys I talked to said, like, quote, "I see why Dumas Johnson transferred." I mean, guys, it's just obvious. The talent level in there is just a different tier. Like, it's a different level of talent than what Pop Dumas Johnson has. Pop's a really good player, but physically speaking, he can't match up with those guys, with the Jalen Walkers and the Raylan Wilsons and the, of course, the C.J. Allens and now the Justin Williams, the more linebacker in the country, the Chris Coles, who's going to be fantastic. He physically just, like, those guys do things he can't do. And he saw the writing on the wall. Pop was still going to play as a leader on the team, but he wasn't going to play near as much. And so he goes somewhere where he's going to play like a full-time role in that Kentucky defense. I'm sure he'll flourish in that defense. So I wish the best for him as long as he's not playing Georgia. When he's playing us, then you're the enemy. But otherwise, I wish him the absolute best. But great news on Jalen Walker. And that inside, I mean, got a lot of positive feedback on the inside linebacker room as a whole. But Jalen Walker is definitely the guy that I heard the most about when it comes to the inside linebacker position. All right, let's go to the cornerback spot. Now, this is interesting. Both cornerback and safety, very similar in the feedback that I got. And the feedback is essentially that it's very tough to differentiate right now at those spots, especially at cornerback. And now, when I say that it's tough to differentiate at cornerback, what I mean by that is I was essentially hearing that all those guys can play. Whether you're talking about Daylon Everett, Julian Humphrey, Daniel Harris, it's almost like they're interchangeable right now. We knew last week they were rotating with the ones. Like, that's not news to us. But how they look out there at practice, we didn't really have any insight into that. But I got some insight after last weekend, and the word is that those guys, like, they're all playing at a really high level. They're all doing really good things. And it's kind of like, well, like, I don't know how you make the decision on who plays at cornerback. I mean, only two guys can start. I don't know how you pick between them because they're all playing really well and they all deserve to be out there on the field. And they're all like SEC caliber, like big time SEC caliber players at that position. So that is a good problem to have, right? Like, if you want to have a problem, it's better to have a problem where you have too many guys and you got to figure out how to get them all on the field so they don't transfer, as opposed to the other side of the spectrum where it's like, oh, we don't have any guys that can play. Obviously, you'd rather have the rich people problems that we have right now. Now, I'm going to go back, y'all. I'm going to go back to what I was telling you all the way back in bowl practices. I don't know if this is going to happen, so I can't tell you this. No coaches mentioned this to me whatsoever, so I don't know. This is me just speculating, complete speculation, just like it was back in December. But based on the feedback I did get, that all these guys, Everett, Humphrey, Harris, they're all looking the part. Oh, by the way, yeah, Ellis Robinson the fifth looks really good too. He's not getting as much work with the ones as the other three are, that top three, that top trio, but he was getting reps with the ones on Thursday and Saturday. Not as much. He wasn't playing as much with that group, but he was working in at times with the number one defense. And for a guy that is in his true freshman year, his first practices on campus as an early enrollee, yeah, that tells you that this guy is a real deal. Like, we already, you know that, right? You know how good this guy is. Number two player in the country, number one cornerback in the country, just lights out player. It's tough to find a role for him right now because you do have all that talent there. But he's one of those guys, like, can you keep him off the field? And it seems like, I don't know if we can. So it's weird. We've never really used cornerback really as a spot we rotate at. Maybe at times late last year before Humphrey suffered that injury. But maybe this year we got to start exploring that. Maybe. I don't know, man. Like, it's weird. Like, because now in the age of transfer portal, if guys don't play that are talented enough to actually play in the SEC, they're not sticking around waiting their turn on the bench. That's just not going to happen. They're going to go play somewhere else. So you got to get them on the field. You got to find a way to get them on the field or they will leave. So it would not shock me to see us maybe change our approach at cornerback and maybe even safety as well. Malachi Starks is going to play. He's going to be a full-time guy at safety. Like the other spot, maybe you see a little bit of a rotation there because you have guys that you're high on that you want to keep in the program and keep them developing. But if you don't play them right now and you just have them work at practice, work on scout team at practice, well, that's like they're going to leave because they're highly rated guys. They know they're talented. They're going to go somewhere else where they can play. They're not going to wait around. Like, the years of guys just waiting their turn for 2-3 years and then jumping in their junior or senior year, those days are gone. Those guys are very rare. The Carson Becks of the world, like, that's a dying breed. That doesn't really happen. So it would not shock me this year to start to see somewhat of a rotation. But here's the other thing. Again, going back to December, speculation on my part. If we have multiple guys that we trust at cornerback, and it's really hard to differentiate between all those guys at cornerback, between the top three and maybe even throw Ellis Robinson in there, well, to me, it makes a lot of sense to maybe explore the possibility of moving one of those guys inside to play star. Now, that becomes a little bit cumbersome itself because you have a guy in Janelle Aguero who's a highly talented player in his own right, highly recruited guy back in the 2023 class, a true freshman last year, who I still think can be a really good player. I think Janelle is actually more of a safety than a true star. My questions with Janelle, like from a coverage standpoint, do you have the coverage ability, the hips to be able to run with those shiftier, speedier slot receivers? I don't know that he does. He played primarily safety in high school. Now, physically, he kind of fits the profile of what we want in our star defender. So the star defender, one of the things you got to be able to do in our defense, like you got to be able to fill against the run. Like you have legit run fit responsibilities where you're like taking on, like pulling guards at times. Like you've got to be able to withstand those kind of blockers, that kind of physicality. And it takes a special body type to be able to do that. Janelle can do that. He didn't like cut people in half. But the coverage standpoint, I don't know. I have questions. I think he's more of a safety personally. So I believe it would be worthwhile to explore the possibility of sliding Dalen Everett inside. Now, I know those of you who have been listening for a while, you know this is not the first time I've mentioned this. Again, going back to December, and I think I mentioned it in the lead-up to spring practice in our spring practice primer series. I'm going to mention it again because when I hear that we have all these corners that all can play, and it's like, I don't know who's better. They're all really good. Well, why don't we try to slide Dalen Everett inside? Because if you're worried about coverage standpoint, and I have gotten some feedback that, you know, not that Janelle is not a good player. He's a fantastic athlete, but the consistency might not be there. You know, I think that's fair to say. He's a young guy. He's still growing. But you, at this point in college football, where you have offenses spreading the field, and they are using that slot receiver position to great effect, and getting those guys in space and just having them just torch defenses and be nightmares for defense coordinators to game plan against, you got to have somebody that can cover, like legit cover big-time receivers like Luther Byrd. Remember what we did last year when we played Missouri. Luther Byrd was tearing up the SEC for most of the year leading up to our game against them. He was leading the SEC in receiving. Well, we played them when we realized, okay, this is their guy. They have some other good players, but Luther Byrd is the guy. You got to take him away. So what did we do? As much as we love Tyke Smith, he was really good for us. He's going to have a good, long, solid NFL career. If not, for anything, it's just a special teams guy. But I think he'll get drafted. I think he'll have a good NFL career. Running the 4-4 for him was big. But Tyke Smith was a good cover guy, good enough. He was competent, but that's not what he did especially well. He was no match for Luther Burden in the slot. Like, Luther Burden was going to torch him like he was doing everyone else. So what did we do? Oh, yeah, we moved Kamari Lassiter inside to match up with Luther Burden. Now, with a lot of other offenses around the country, putting their premier receivers in that slot position. Doesn't happen with every offense, but you start to see a trend moving in that direction. It just makes too much sense to me to put one of your better cover guys that is also big enough, physical enough, to play that star position. Because let's, again, go back to why did Dalen Everett play over Julian Humphrey last year? I think Julian was a better cover guy. I still believe that. But he was not as advanced and not as willing to take on the perimeter run game and the perimeter screen game. That's what separated Dalen Everett and got him on the field. He had better practice habits, number one, but he also was just a more physical player on the perimeter, and he was better against the run. He was better in the perimeter screen game, attacking blockers, all those things. He is a bigger bodied guy than Humphrey, than Daniel Harris. Daniel Harris is long, but he's rail thin. He's bigger and stronger and more physical than Ellis Robinson the fourth. So if you're going to explore maybe moving one of those guys inside, The obvious answer is Dalen Everett. It's obvious to me. Now, I don't know that we'll make that move, but I think with the number of players that we have at the cornerback spot that you want to find time for, you got to find a way to get all these guys on the field. It's like the offensive line. We always hear like, hey, we're going to get our best five on the field. Well, why is secondary any different? Like, we cross-train guys on the offensive line so that we can mix and match and get the best five on the field, whatever that may look like. Why would we not do the same in the secondary? Now, we've traditionally not really done that. We cross-train a little bit, like safety and star, you cross-train some. But we don't do it as much as we do on the offensive line. I just don't know why now why you wouldn't do that. A guy like Dan Everett, who's been in the system for a while, he can take on more of a load. So I don't know if it'll happen. It certainly would not shock me, and I would certainly endorse at least exploring that possibility. And now that's with the caveat of if Janelle Aguero does not step up and just like take that position. I'm really high on his ability. I just don't know if it's that star. I think we should get Janelle more looks at safety. That's just me. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but that's how I would do it. Now, these coaches know a lot more than I do. They have a lot of information to work off of. They are professionals. I am the amateur here. So I usually defer to them, but I think it's worthwhile to start maybe looking at some of these things, like cross-training some of these guys. All right, so that's cornerback. Now, speaking of safety, let's move there next. Now, we know Malachi Starks is going to be a full-time starter at safety. Like, we know he played basically in our defense, the safeties are kind of interchangeable, but like the classical, like, free safety position. He can play strong safety as well. He's big enough, strong enough, physical enough, he can do that. But he's been a free safety in our defense, you know, his first few years on campus. So he'll fill that role. He'll be a full-time starter there. He's just recovering from a shoulder injury that he had kind of taken care of early in the offseason. He's not doing much right now. So that's actually maybe in some ways a blessing in disguise because we have a lot more opportunities for these other guys who are battling to fill the other safety spot left vacant by Javon Buller going to the NFL. They all get more reps. And right now, it continues to be primarily with the number ones. Opening with the one defense is Dan Jackson and David Daniel Sisavon. But there are a couple of guys that I was hearing some really positive reviews about coming out of the last couple of days of practice. Number one, Jake Pope is getting a lot of work with the ones, the transfer from Alabama. I don't know if he'll end up being that guy, but the people I talked to were actually pleasantly surprised by the kind of athlete that he is out there on the field. The other guy that I don't think is getting enough love in this competition, he's kind of been like the lost man, and I blame myself for that as much as anyone else. I haven't talked enough about him. But Jacorey Thomas is a name that I heard from multiple sources. In fact, almost every guy I talked to that was really paying attention to the safeties out there said that Jacorey Thomas, he's a guy to watch for. And this is a guy that doesn't get all of the attention. And you hear a lot about Dan Jackson. He's been around. So is David Sisavon. We know K.J. Bolden is the hotshot five-star freshman. And Jacorey Thomas has quietly been in the wings for a couple of years. He's going in his third year in the system. And I've heard for a couple of years now at practice, our coaches have really liked what Jacorey Thomas has done. And I think he'd be a good player, but he just hasn't had the opportunity. When you talk about Chris Smith and Malachi Starks and Javon Bullard making that move back there, but it doesn't mean that Jacorey can't play. So he's making his little move right now too. He's getting a little bit of work with the ones, not as much, but the people I talked to were very impressed with what they saw from Jacorey Thomas, which is good news. We need as many players that can play at that spot as possible. The more competition we have, the better. The cream will rise to the top. Iron sharpens iron, all those things. And then, yes, I know K.J. Bolden. Can't talk about safety without talking about K.J. Bolden, the hotshot five-star freshman who we're all very high on, who's a supremely gifted athlete. We all know that. But, I always tell you, when you talk about freshmen, it's dangerous to expect things from them. If you get something, that's great, man. Just, put your hands together and praise God. But, don't expect it. And as you might expect with a freshman, his head is spinning right now. He's not really getting any work with the ones. At least that's, what I was told is that he's not really getting any run with the ones right now. He's working some with the twos, and when he knows what he's doing, you see the athleticism, you see the ability, but he doesn't always know what he's doing. And, coaches are coaching him up pretty hard and getting on him and making sure this guy gets up to speed. Because, our coaches know in terms of, overall athleticism, it's no secret that the guy is a superior athlete to everyone back there with the exception of Malachi Starks. It's just a matter of, can you get ready fast enough? How quickly can you accelerate that development? That is something we don't know. We're trying to find that out right now. So he's not getting work with the ones right now. Maybe that will change in fall camp. Maybe it will change as spring goes on. I would not expect to see him get much work with the ones at G-Day right now based off what I'm hearing. But, I did hear some really good things. He's flashing. You see the talent. You see the athleticism. He's going to be a really good one. He's just not quite there right now, which, he shouldn't be. He's an early enrollee true freshman. And then finally, on the defensive side of the ball, a name that came up essentially across the board with everyone that I talked to was defensive lineman Jamal Jarrett. That, like Jalen Walker, music to my ears. You guys know as well as I do, the biggest issue that we had defensively last year, we were still good defensively, but we were not the same caliber defense that we were in 21 and 22 in those back-to-back national title runs. I think that was the biggest shortcoming of our entire team last year. We just simply were not as good against the run as we had been in years past. And a big part of that was because we were not as dominant up front on the defensive line. We didn't have those guys that just demand double teams, right? Just eat blockers and keep other guys free. We didn't have those guys. We didn't have those difference makers. We had good players, didn't have difference makers. And you need different difference makers if you want to be as good as we have been defensively. We didn't have those guys last year. And I don't know that we've got them this year. That is still a concern of mine. But I am encouraged. Even coming to spring practice, I was encouraged that, okay, we have these young guys, Jamal Jarrett and Jordan Hall, who I think have a chance to be really good in terms of their physical ceiling. It's higher than guys like Nazir Stackhouse and Warren Brinson. They're just not there yet. So I think a big part of our trajectory as a defense this year, getting back to closer to what we were in 21 and 22, is how much can we improve along the defensive line? And how much we improve on the defensive line, I think, is largely contingent upon how much those young guys develop. How much better can they be this year? How much closer are they to actually being difference makers for us? And that is something that we don't know the answer to right now. But saying that, again, almost every person that I talked to, all the feedback I got, one of the common themes, almost universal, was Jamal Jarrett. And it's not necessarily so much how dominant he looked out there on the field, although I did get a lot of feedback. He was playing at a really high level when he was out there playing that zero tech nose guard. It's just how he looked. Again, these guys were, most of these guys were there last year. They know what Jamal Jarrett looked like as a freshman. Guys, there's a reason he didn't play much. He didn't really play at all until late in the year. He just wasn't physically there. He was a big dude. It's kind of like the defensive lineman version of Rod Robinson. He's had a lot of bad weight, man. And he had to figure out how to practice at this level, which a lot of guys do. That's not unique to him. He had to figure out how to do it. He had to improve his work habits. He had to get stronger in the weight room. He had to attack those things. He had to mature. He had to grow up a little bit. And he's done that, to his credit. And what I was told was this guy, his body looks freakish right now. The way he's trimmed up and he still maintains the size, the girth that he has in that position, and the power that he has in that spot, he's moving faster, he's more athletic, and he is poised to be much more of a factor in our defense. Now, how much of a factor, that's what I can't tell you. I don't know. Again, I didn't see my own two eyes. But just telling you the feedback I've been getting, what I'm hearing is that he is definitely going to play for us this year. He's going to be a big part of what we do defensively. It just remains to be seen how much does he continue to develop, how close will he be to being a difference maker this year. I don't know. But again, like all these other positions, I'm encouraged by these signs we're seeing very early in spring practice and the feedback I'm getting from people that I trust that actually know football. I don't expect Jamal Jarrett to start at that zero tech nose. It's going to be not a stack house because, I mean, look, he's a third-year starter. Like, Kirby typically defers those guys, at least in terms of starting. Now, as the season progresses, as Jarrett gets more and more reps and more run, I think Ja has a chance to really start to eat in significantly to some of those snaps. Now, he's got to do it, right? It's like all these positions. You got to do on the field. It's great to hear the positive signs right now, but it's got to translate. But all we can work off of right now is what they're doing at practice in the here and now. And what he's doing in the here and now is really encouraging. It's a dramatic leap forward from where he was this time last year. Really a dramatic leap forward from where he was at any point most of last season. But yeah, all right, guys, that wraps it up. Those are the big names, the common themes, the common names I heard show up over and over again and the feedback that I was getting, the people that I talked to. So again, I'm not an intel guy. I'm not an insider kind of guy, but this is just one of those cases where I just happen to have a few contacts where I did get a little bit of intel, and I wanted to bring it on here to share with you guys. Take it for what it's worth. It's very early in spring practice, and spring practice is not even close to the season, but it's better than nothing, right? Next week, we will have our first scrimmage of the spring, so we'll have even more to talk about. We'll have some actual like game setting type stuff. Obviously, it's not a game, but that's as close as we get to games prior to actually end of the season. So yeah, well, I can't wait for that. I'm excited for it. We'll have some feedback for you guys coming out of that. I will be back one more time later this week. We're either going to be recapping a Georgia win over Ohio State on Tuesday night in the NIT to get to the NIT semifinals, or we will be recapping the season that was for the 2023-24 Georgia basketball team. So we'll have a little Georgia basketball talk for you. Might preview a little baseball. We got to go to Tennessee this weekend. So we'll be back for you guys one more time later this week. Again, make sure you are following our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, look for Glory UGA Podcast. Subscribe, watch the videos, like, comment, all those things. It's greatly appreciated. I am actively right now, as soon as I actually load this up, I'll be getting back on the Jared Curtis video breakdown. I'm working on that. That was taking a little bit longer, so I don't know if I'll have it ready by Tuesday night. I'm going to shoot for that, but it might be with our game being played with a basketball game on Tuesday night. It might be Wednesday, but at some point this week, I will have that video content ready for you guys. But thank you for being here, guys. I always appreciate all of your support. Thank you so much. I'm Tyler, and of course, as always, go Dawgs!